Chapter 1, Captain Joseph. A man never goes so far as when he does not know where he is going. Oliver Cromwell. I felt as if John and I were almost floating over the perfect asphalt. The ride was wonderfully smooth, and there were none of the usual rattling bike on rough road sounds. We clicked along comfortably at 90 kilometres an hour. Not too fast to miss the scenery, and not too fast to deal with the ever-present risk of a dashing animal. But fast enough to feel that we were getting somewhere. The day was slightly overcast, with clouds that were tinged only with silver grey and not the menacing purple grey of a coming storm. Rising gently, the road no longer shimmered with heat, and for once we didn't feel overdressed. As we drew closer to the last major town on the road to the Malawi border, huts and mud brick shops began to appear along the roadside. Hand-painted signs advertised fruits and vegetables alongside garish posters for Omo washing powder, flour and cigarettes. We slowed down for each cluster of buildings, nervous of dogs, goats and children. The traffic thickened rapidly and little clusters of buildings merged into continuous outskirts. A few hundred metres in front, a bus was pulling over to the side. I slowed right down. When a bus pulls to a halt in Africa, life explodes. There's a mad rush to get off, to drag belongings off the giant roof rack, and to search out friends in the milling confusion. There never seemed to be any toilets, so it was also a dash for the bushes as well. Travelling by bike, I at least had the chance to pee in sweet-smelling peace and quiet, but bus riders don't have that luxury. What they do get is a full choice of refreshments whenever the bus stops. Street vendors selling fruit, soft drinks, skewered goat meat, samosas, or plastic bags full of fresh pineapple chunks all rush into the chaos with the hope that the passengers leaning out of the windows would buy something for the journey. I'd seen enough African bus stops by the time I made it to Tanzania to know that no one would be looking out for a passing motorcycle. Slowing even more, the worst of the rush had pretty much cleared from the road by the time we got close. With a headlight on full beam and my thumb on the horn, I felt that, as usual, we'd make it through the chaos. We didn't. There on the right stood an Mzee, who was carefully looking both ways before stepping out into the road. I'd never seen anyone do that before in Africa. Normally, the inevitable potholes, the condition of the vehicles, or the enthusiastic yells of the conductors meant that a pedestrian could hear something coming and they wouldn't need to look. The old man stared straight at us and hesitated before trying to make it across. But try he did. With just two steps, he was in front of us. There was no time to react as the front wheel hit him with a sickening thump. As we hit the road, I saw him somersault in almost slow motion over to the rubbish-strewn roadside. Somehow, I ended up on my feet with just the sleeve of my jacket scratched, but John was rolling in agony in the middle of the road. Seeing that there wasn't a lot to do for him, I rushed over to the bike where petrol was spewing out over the hot engine. A passerby helped me pick it up from where it had landed almost upside down in the ditch. Another spectator yelled in Swahili, "You must not move your machine. The police will be coming." After squatting down to turn the petrol off, I looked up to see that I was surrounded. Above me, all except for a small oval of blue-grey, shadowy black faces had closed off the sky. I was scared. There were many stories about what had happened to other bikers who'd been unlucky enough to hit someone in Africa. Some had only just escaped with their lives, and some hadn't escaped at all. John lay hunched in the road holding his knees, and I could even see the tears on his shocked face. What had I done? Even if it had felt the right thing to do, John's agony meant that making a run for it on the bike wasn't an option. I decided to stay crouching down by the bike and try to look as pathetic as possible in the hope that if I looked a complete wimp, they wouldn't string me up. In the meantime, the police had been summoned, and with no police cars available, they were hitchhiking their way out to us. My oval of blue-grey sky had all but disappeared when a man pushed through the crowd. In really good English, he asked, "Mister, are you okay?" He'd seen the accident happen and said